There are a lot of fine programs in New York City, but what about that high-tech one located on an island in the East River? Cornell Tech. It's been a little over 5 years since we had a representative of Cornell Tech on Admission Straight Talk. What's new at that very innovative program? Dean Matt Damore and Dr. Raymond Lutzky will tell us what's happening at Cornell Tech, and it's a lot. Let's find out about this pioneering program that combines deep dives and specialized masters with a collaborative cross-functional approach. Paradoxical? Yes, and incredibly intriguing. Let's learn more. Welcome to the 289th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in," and not only in, but in at the best program for you. I'd like to thank the sponsor of today's podcast, which is Accepted. Deadlines are looming. If you're worried that your application, and specifically your essays, won't make the cut, let us help you. Access the expertise and experience that have helped thousands over more than 20 years gain acceptance to the grad programs and the subsequent professions of their dreams. Explore our services at www.accepted.com. Our guests today are Dean Matt Damore, Associate Dean at Cornell Tech and Professor of Practice at Cornell Tech and Cornell Law, and Dr. Ray Lutzky, Senior Director of Enrollment and Admissions at Cornell Tech. Since they both have bios and CVs longer than my arm, I'm going to do away with the details and simply welcome them and dive into the podcast. Dean Damore and Dr. Lutzky, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Linda, thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Okay, Dean Damore, can you give a little background about Cornell Tech or a brief history? It hasn't been around that long, so.
It hasn't been around that long. So Cornell Tech grew out of a 2011 competition that Mayor Bloomberg ran, still mayor of New York City. And he wanted to incentivize the construction of a first-in-class technical graduate campus in New York City. And he solicited competition. He solicited bids for this competition from major academic institutions. I think 7 or 8 ultimately submitted bids, including Columbia and NYU and MIT and Stanford. Cornell University, in a partnership with the Technion University of Israel, won out in a joint bid. We were awarded land to build a campus, and we got started from there. The academic curriculum is a combination of 7 master's programs, a small PhD program that really reaches applied sciences in the technical areas, but also business and law.
Okay. All right. Now, normally in a podcast like this, I ask for an overview of the programs. However, there are 7 master's programs, and I'm going to list them briefly: the Cornell Tech MBA, the MS of Engineering and Computer Science, the MS in Electrical and Computer Engineering, Master's in Operations Research and Info Engineering, the LLM in Law, Technology and Entrepreneurship, the Technion Cornell Dual Master's Degrees in Connective Media, and the Technion Cornell Dual Master's Degrees in Health Tech. So that's, on one hand, it's a broad spectrum of degrees. On the other hand, they're all deep dives into very specific areas. And so I don't think we can get an overview, okay? But what I'd like to know is, what do all these programs have in common? What's the common thread? What makes a Cornell Tech program or Cornell Tech program?
So what
and,
makes
and Ray, you can jump in if you have something to add.
What makes our programs Cornell Tech program really is studio. It's the interdisciplinary nature of the programs that are built around the studio curriculum. The studio curriculum is 1/3 of all of our 1-year master's programs.
Wow.
So of the programs you identified, they're all 1-year masters, except the master's in connective media and the master's in digital health. Those are both master of science programs. They're 2 years. All of the others are 1-year programs, either Master of Engineering, Master of Business Administration, or Master of Laws, or LLM. Of the 1-year master's programs, they all share the studio. And so that includes the technical programs as well as the law and the business programs. It's 1/3 of their credits in both semesters. What Studio involves is a cohesive interdisciplinary program built around both product development, product design and development, as well as the basics of figuring out whether to launch a company, how to launch a company, and to provide our students across the programs with the basic skills and insights to help them decide as to whether they're actually going to launch a startup when they graduate, and to give them some of the tools to enable them to do that. I can go on. I can continue a little bit more to describe how the program breaks down in the two semesters if that'd be helpful.
Well, actually, my next question, is going to be, what is the studio format?
Sure.
And why did Cornell Tech choose to go with that? But before I get there, it sounds like the program was very much, geared towards entrepreneurs. Do established companies ever want grads from Cornell Tech? Or what percentage goes which direction, in either direction?
So that's absolutely right. It's a really good point. We've been experimenting and looking at ways of working with established companies as well as with startups. And Ray can talk about some of the things we're doing on the admission side. But with respect to the studio program, we bring in, there's two ways to look at it. Part of our mission is to inspire and help students to spin out companies. And we've succeeded in spinning out 40 to 50 companies over the past 5 or 6 years. At the same time, though, we do that built around a curriculum that integrates established companies. So in the fall, hundreds of companies proposed challenges to our students. Things like, how might we bring banking services to rural India? How might we improve visitor access to art programs at the Museum of Modern Art? How might we better educate people about retirement options, health insurance, pick your industry? And those are all sponsored by companies or non-governmental organizations or government groups. Students work in the fall under the supervision of faculty, practitioners, and contacts at the sponsoring companies who propose these challenges to work within this kind of open field of that central broad challenge to come up with a product. And they work with established companies to be able to do that. In the spring, in the past, students have been then tasked with, okay, now that you know how to build a product.
So that's the product studio?
That's product studio.
That's the fall component.
Exactly right.
Okay.
In the spring, we've had historically startup studio. And in startup studio, you take the product development skills that you've learned in the fall, and now you add on to that. Okay, now not only have to figure out how to build a product, but I got to figure out whether or not it's going to be one that might attract investors, attract a customer base. How do I iterate around to actually build a product that people might want to invest in and people might want to buy? We've added to that this year with a studio program that we call, for lack of a better word, Big Co Studio, because we know that many of our graduates don't go on to spin out companies. Maybe they're going to do that in a few years, and we're hoping that they'll have the skills and contacts to be able to do that. But we know that over the short term, they're going to go work for Amazon, Google, the banks in the area, other big technical companies, Facebook, legal tech companies across the board. And we want to be able to teach them about how to innovate within the Big Co environment.
Because many of them for those people who are in the 1 year masters,
yep.
Am I correct that in the fall they have product studio and everybody pursuing a 1 year master's participates in product studio, whether they're in the LLM program or the information science program, correct? And then in the spring, they can choose to do either startup studio or Big Co studio?
That's exactly right.
Okay. And when you're in the studio, you're working with people from all these different master's programs. Am I right?
That's correct. In the fall, we use actually a matching program. So the students bid on the challenges that they're interested in working on. So they're matched based on their bid, but also based on their area of interest, so that we don't have all computer science students on one project and all law or business students on another. So they're matched based on interest and program. In the spring, it's a little bit more ad hoc than that. Students are encouraged to form their own teams, but there is a push, a nudge to try to encourage folks to be interdisciplinary, because we believe that it's through interdisciplinary teams that workable real world.
That's fascinating. So it's also, and I realized when I was preparing for this, that you have somewhat of a very paradoxical approach. Because on one hand, the masters by their very nature mean you do a deep dive, right? At the same time, you have this very collaborative educational component to the masters that requires cross-functional collaboration and thinking.
Absolutely. In fact, we have courses that are not part of the studio that are designed to reach the students in the other programs. So we have law classes that are for the business and technical students. We have business classes that are for the technical and law students. And we have an introduction to programming class that's for the business students and the law students, so that they can all get exposed to the other disciplines and learn how to talk to folks who are going to be their colleagues and helping them succeed in whatever endeavor they choose to pursue.
And to your point, Linda, and just to add to that, that scares the heck out of some of our applicants and students, and is the reason why I've never been in a position as an admissions director to say this before, but there are students we don't want applying to Cornell Tech. There are students for whom that deep dive is really what they're critically interested in, and the collaborative interdisciplinary nature of our studio curriculum isn't what they want. And we have conversations with these students all the time, say, well, is this really what you want? Because if they're not interested in that environment, they're not interested in being part of this interdisciplinary work that we do that occupies almost 30% of their curriculum. There are lots of other great programs at Cornell and other places, right, but maybe not here.
Right. No, that's very good. And that was just something that struck me as I was preparing for the call. Now, Dr. Lutsky, what are the qualities you seek in applicants? An applicant to the LLM program and the operations research program, they bring really different skills, okay? Training, background, what makes for a successful Cornell Tech student?
That's a great question. And it is an iterative, evolving process, because as the curriculum grows and the campus grows, we do look for different characteristics of successful students. We spend a lot of time looking at our data, given that we have a small graduate population. But in addition to some of the things that have already been discussed, I would say a key characteristic is we're looking for students who want to build stuff that matters. We're looking for students who not only have this entrepreneurial bent in them, but also have this imperative to create an impact beyond the strong technical skills of someone with a math background who would be a suitable candidate for ORRI, or a practicing attorney who is going to be interested in our Master of Laws program. We are looking for students that are going to be able to survive in that interdisciplinary format and be able to be okay with a graduate school that really challenges the paradigm of what it means to be in grad school in terms of collaboration, in terms of work style. So beyond having those skills, that digital intuition, we really do look for fit above all else. And I would say that from a master's student point of view, this school privileges fit far more than some other institutions, which is why most, if not all, applicants we're considering for admission are interviewed, and a majority of that interview is based on fit.
And when you're looking for this collaborative or interdisciplinary approach, are you looking mostly at the undergraduate transcript, at the kind of work they did? Where are you finding it?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. While we certainly want students with the right technical background and a strong academic transcript, we often find we have to interrogate that transcript a little more, because while five students may say they've taken algorithms and programming, what that means to each of those five students could be different. So for some of our programs, we offer a technical assessment to help better understand the technical ability of the student with relation mm-hmm. to the kinds of projects they'll be working on here, mm-hmm. but also asking questions around teamwork, around how they see themselves as a leader, how they have learned something about themselves when working with others trained differently than them. Those are very telling questions. And when you have the student that really wants to do it on their own or feels like they're pulling the weight of their team every time they're in a team project, we know that student may not be as successful here as someone who understands that every student in a team, especially in an interdisciplinary team, is bringing something unique to the project and has something to contribute.
Now, let's focus for a second on the Cornell Tech MBA, whose round three deadline and which is also the last deadline for this application cycle, is January 3rd. Can you discuss the components of that application specifically and kind of what you're trying to ferret out of each of those components?
Certainly. The Johnson Cornell Tech MBA is our oldest program here at Cornell Tech. And in some ways, I think one of the most exciting. It's a year-long program. The students spend 10 weeks in Ithaca, New York, and the rest of the time at Cornell Tech. But I would say that there's some different characteristics of that application process that make students successful. First, instead of a personal statement, we do ask for a creativity statement with a very specific prompt attached to it. Students should pay attention to that prompt and to the limitations on that creativity statement. While we encourage creativity, we also want the answer to the question we're asking.
It's important, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes we don't get it. For those applicants who are offered the opportunity to conduct an interview, either in person or via video, there's a case that we ask students to respond to. And in that case, while we're certainly looking to see that the student is excited and interested in the topic, what we're really looking for is their critical thinking skills and to better understand how they dissect a problem and how they use their resources to form a solution to that problem, or at least give some idea about how they might form a solution to that problem. And then on top of that, I would say having the right skills, having the right work experience is important. Our Johnson Cornell Tech MBA students tend to be a little older. The average age last year was 29. The average years of work experience tends to be between 3 and 5 years. But again, that fit, that cultural fit, because there are a lot of great MBA programs out there. There are two-year MBA programs out there, which will give students more opportunity to explore their interests. In a one-year accelerated MBA, we need a good sense that not only would this student be the right fit for us, but they have a good sense of what they want to be doing when they graduate. So when they start the program, they can begin their job search in earnest.
Right. Well, that's, I think, a big thing for even for the two-year MBAs. Now, Dean Damore, Cornell Tech has an LLM program in law, technology, entrepreneurship. And I can see how that fits with Cornell Tech's mission, but couldn't it just be an LLM and, let's say, intellectual property? What is distinctive about the Cornell Tech LLM program?
So we've looked at that, and a number of schools have LLM programs in IP, but IP is really only one part of what lawyers for tech companies, and particularly lawyers for emerging growth tech companies, lawyers for startups, need to know. So focusing narrowly on IP wouldn't get our students to where we want them to be. So instead, we have a great intellectual property professor who is well-known in the field of both IP and internet law. So he teaches an intellectual property class, and he teaches an internet law class. But in addition to that, we have classes on high-growth corporate transactions. This is not IP at all, except trying to help figure out how much your IP is worth once it's into the company, and how to figure out how to value your company, and how to figure out how to set it up right from the beginning, and then how to secure investment, and how to get through your Series A and your Series B, and et cetera, to a point where you can get to a steady state, or maybe be thinking about an acquisition or an exit or something like that. And that's helping our students understand the corporate life cycle from the perspective of a founder is really important to what we're trying to do in this program. In addition to a course like that, we also have a course that introduces them to the kinds of technology transactions that they're going to be involved in when they counsel a startup. So not just how to get money into the company, but how to get technology in, how to get technology out, how to do supply agreements, manufacturing agreements, distribution agreements, software as a services agreements. And it's a really focused, applied kind of program where we're giving the students the toolkit so that when they graduate, they know what these agreements look like, what questions to ask. They've had some experience drafting them. They can talk to their clients about them. They can talk to partners they might be working with about them. And in addition to all that, they get the opportunity to explore other areas of law, like law of robots or cybersecurity or the like, because those might be applicable to the kinds of companies that they work with. We've also experimented in the law program this year by bringing in courses that we think are going to be of general applicability, not just to the lawyers, but to everybody. So not a law for non-law class, but a introduction to the law of fintech, which is going to attract our lawyers, but also attract some folks in the MBA program. We did this year for the first time a law, I'm going to be blanking on the name, but it's something like digital health law, where the professors who are top-notch practitioners in the field of health law are coming in and teaching the health regulatory issues and the health legal issues and the privacy issues and the tech transactions issues and the HIPAA. But they're reaching our health tech program, right, which includes, you know, 2-year master's of science program, 2 years master's of science students. And they're reaching our MBA students who might want to pursue a career in this field. So we're looking at ways of, we're doing this on the business side, we're doing this on the law side, we're doing this on the tech side, of adding things to the curriculum that are a broad applicability to this really unique population that we have here. And so that's a long answer to a short question, but it's why a LLM and intellectual property would just be too narrow for what we want to do.
Right. Again, I'm struck, and I've said this before, by the paradox between, you know, the program and the whole focus of Cornell Tech, which on one hand, at almost simultaneously and paradoxically, is narrow, but really at the same time broad.
And I think Ray put it very well. We're looking for students who want a deep dive, but the deep dive they want is into this area of technology and business and innovation that is, it's specialized, but where they're going to get the full rounded set of tools to be able to succeed in that career path. And not everybody wants that, but the students who do, and the students who know that that's what they want coming in, and know, like for the MBA program, that they're not going to get 30 accounting classes or 30 finance classes. We don't have that kind of depth in those areas. But if they come here, they know they're going to get classes that are focused on tech on the business side, classes that are focused on tech on the technical side, law classes that are going to expose them to the legal issues that that emerging tech companies have, and they're going to get the experience to actually build something through the studio. And those are the students that we want.
To that point, and it's an interesting kind of concept, it is exemplified by our unofficial logo. Cornell Tech has this thing called the Twisty T, which you'll see around and people are always wondering what it is. It's representative of the breadth, that's the wide part of the T, and the depth, which is the deep part of the T.
Yeah.
What we've done with our T is we've twisted it to speak to exactly what Matt is speaking about, that the depth is in a direction you wouldn't expect, that it goes off in unexpected directions, that while you get this deep dive, you end up going in sort of a non-traditional path. And that's why our logo, and we have a new one every year, I'm wearing one right now, you can't see it on the podcast, but
no.
It's a twisty T, and every year our students make a new one, and they own that as part of what makes us special.
Isn't that kind of the essence of innovation?
Yeah, it is. Taking something that existed and turning it around and making it into something that innovates something simple. It's, yeah, that's it.
What advice would you give for applicants in general, or if you want to focus on a specific program? Ray, why don't you start with that one? And then Matt, if you have some, say Dr. Lutsky and Dean Damore, you can start first and then add to it. Okay.
Sure. I'm happy to. I would say it's very clear when we get an applicant who is passionate about what we do. Finding the right applicants is what our admissions team is all about. So when applying, I think doing your research is very important. Don't engage with the admission officer of the school just to ingratiate yourself. It's not that kind of place. If you want to engage in a meaningful way that's going to add value to your understanding of the program and what makes you a good applicant. I would also say that with the exception of our Master of Laws program and with our MBA program, a strong background in technology is expected. This is not a place for career changers. In fact, that's true for all 7 of our programs. Nobody's going to come into our Master of Laws really wanting to change careers too much. No one's going to come into our MBA program really wanting to switch careers. The timeline is just too short, And the level of instruction is just so high that this is a place for folks who want to reinforce what they know they want in their careers and have already had some experience going in that direction. And then I would just add what I said earlier, that while we certainly request a number of things that are traditional parts of any admission application, a GRE score, a transcript, a recommendation letter, the fit with the school is going to be the most critical part for really all of our programs, that we find that applicants self-select between the Master of Engineering degrees we have here and the Master of Engineering degrees we have in Ithaca, because they are different curricularly and they do lead to different outcomes. So understanding that and understanding what we are trying to do in our curriculum at Cornell Tech and why we think we're building successful students to disrupt and impact the tech ecosystem, not just in New York City, but in the rest of the world, I think that is a key component for any applicant to be thinking about.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with all that. I want to add a little bit of a gloss for the LLM program specifically. Sure. Ray is exactly right that we're looking for folks who want to deepen their area of expertise in this field of tech law and learn the skills to serve this emerging and vibrant community in New York City. What I would add to it is that not everybody who applies to the LLM is strong in all of those areas. We have some folks who are really strong lawyers, but haven't necessarily been tech lawyers. And they have an interest in tech, demonstrated maybe by something on their resume or some prior experience that they've had, but they're not necessarily practicing in that area. Those students apply to us because they want to deepen their ability to practice tech law. We see some folks who have done startup, who have been lawyers, didn't really do tech law, but then went off and were at a startup for a couple of years and said, look, now I need to deepen my legal background. And so we do have folks who come to us and say, look, I'm a great lawyer, but I need to do more in this tech field. And so there is, I think, on the LLM side, maybe a little bit more of a pivot path than in some of the other programs, but you need to come in with that demonstrated interest in that technology, with demonstrated interest in technology, having great legal skills, and being able to demonstrate to us that you're going to have the ability to succeed in this short program and achieve what it is that you're setting out to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody goes for a master's degree, whether it's an MBA or any graduate degree, to go back and do the same thing that they were doing before they got the education.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
But they may not, you know, going to Dr. Lipsky's point before, they may not want to do a complete pivot. Like sometimes the MBA allows people to change function and industry.
Exactly.
I think that from what you're telling me, and correct me if I'm wrong, at Cornell Tech, they want to move up in a particular direction, that they've already started down that path. Maybe they'll make minor adjustments, but they've already started down their path and they want to accelerate the progression down that path. Is that a fair analysis or not exactly?
I think that's a good way to think about it. I think in the law program, there's a little bit more degrees of freedom in that pivot that's possible, in part because the program's really intense, and in part because I think the law program, unlike the other two programs, these are folks who already have a graduate degree.
Right.
So to a certain extent.
And a professional degree.
Right. So to a certain extent, we can do less foundational than we need to do in the other programs. And that gives us a little bit more latitude to really focus on a particular area and get students to turn into turn a little bit more into a new direction, if that's what they're looking for.
Now, in terms of the outcomes for the students, in rough terms, okay, I don't expect you to have the exact figures at your fingertips. What percentage, let's say, start up a new company upon graduation, or work for startups, or work for larger companies like Amazon and Google and those companies?
Sure. And one of the things we're most proud of right now are our outcomes. We've seen a nearly 100% placement rate every year we've been around. And that is due to a combination of the startup piece, our incredibly dedicated career services, career management team, and the fact that our faculty in the LLM program have been very good with their students and helping them get really incredible placements. To answer your question, about one out of every six students spins out. So it's about four. I mean, if you look at 15% of our students have gone on to become startup founders. That isn't necessarily through no fault of their own. They may have tried very hard to become a startup founder, but it is difficult. We do offer four awards each year of $100,000 to startups founded by our students to spin those startups out in space we give them on campus, which is somewhat like an incubation model, but it is a little more than that. Most of our students, though, as you alluded to, are looking for full-time employment, and we work hard with them to begin in the fall curating that experience. Our career fairs, we call anti-career fairs because they are not the traditional kind of wandering around talking to employers. Employers have schedules of students curated for them to meet with based on vetting by our career management team. And we also have tremendous access within the city of New York and around the world into various tech hubs, just not only because we've got some great folks involved on our board, folks like Michael Bloomberg who've been involved since the very beginning, but tenant companies that are also co-located here on the campus with our students, ranging from Citigroup and Two Sigma the hedge fund to Ferrero Rocher, the chocolate company, has got their innovation sciences unit across from my building. I don't know what they're making over there, but I hope they start hiring some of our students.
Must smell good.
So the bottom line is we are driven by our placement rate because of our imperative to serve the tech ecosystem in the city of New York and in the United States as part of our mission. Given the space we've been granted on Roosevelt Island here in the city, we are really here to have economic impact. And as I said earlier, build stuff that matters. We certainly have a research agenda, but since we're so laser focused on the placement of our students, I think you'll continue to see strong improvement or placements in the future and improvements in the places they go. We certainly have had students go to big consulting firms like Accenture. We've certainly had students go to large technology companies like Google. We've had some of the startups our students have founded be acquired by places like Adobe. So it's really an exciting story, and stay tuned for more, I think.
Okay. I assume also that, some people may go work for somebody else immediately upon graduation, but then 3-5 years out, and I realize you don't have much more of a history than that, they at that point they might start their own company. And of course, more and more companies are trying to be entrepreneurial. So within larger entities.
And that's an interesting point. We do have a wonderful partnership with MasterCard, where they send some of their employees here through a very competitive process where they're funded to join our MBA program or our computer science program for the exact purpose you're describing, to bring them back to the organization and help them innovate within the context of a large financial institution or large tech company, depending on how you think about MasterCard. And we're seeing more and more of that from organizations like Bloomberg, like Deloitte, various other companies that have approached us and wanted to work with us. So potentially we'll get to the point where some of our students are looking for employment, but some of our students have a really good idea of where they're going afterwards. But maybe a couple of years down the road, they're going to take those skills from Startup Studio or take that understanding they got from working with founders like different startups to launch their own venture. Absolutely. And they're connected to the tech ecosystem, venture capital, a lot of different pieces that they get here at Cornell Tech.
Sounds good. Any plans to add additional master's or PhD programs? I mean, it seems like you've been adding a little bit faster than one a year since starting. So I don't know, anything like that, or data analytics program, something like that?
Go ahead. If you want to speak to this, Matt, we certainly do have PhD programs here at Cornell Tech. They're administered by my colleagues in Ithaca because of the funding and matching faculty with PhD students is really the domain of the academic department. So while they do study and do research here at Cornell Tech, the admission process is through the graduate school in Ithaca. In terms of new master's programs, we do have many things on the drawing board. And as you can imagine, there's no shortage of good ideas about what our next master's should be. But we're looking into some things around built environments. We're looking into some things around technology and infrastructure and cities. And I think that's the direction a lot of our faculty are interested to go because it connects a lot of what we're already working on with engineering, with big data, with analytics, And with social impact, which is, again, a core part of what we do here.
Yeah. Also sounds like it might be related to what you did in designing your own campus.
Absolutely. Right. I guess related to that, you know, on the professional side, some things you may see in the future would be additional joint programs. We'd like to look, there are all of our programs, and this is on the technical side and on the law side, are degree programs that are Cornell University programs. So all of our programs here are, you know, have a home department up in Ithaca. Our LLM degree is a Cornell Law School degree. Our MBA degree is a Johnson Graduate School of Management degree. And we're looking at ways to do more joint programs like you would see, you know, like a JD MBA, for example, or maybe ways of doing a two-year MBA where students spend a year up in Ithaca and a year down here. Those are things that we might see on the horizon as ways of both building on what we already have in Ithaca and leveraging what we can do down here interdisciplinarily at Cornell Tech.
And something else I think it's important to mention, and we haven't really talked about it too much on this podcast, is we have a tremendous opportunity in working with our academic partners in Haifa, Israel. The Technion, sure. Israel Technology, is the oldest university in Israel, a very well-regarded science and engineering school, and the place that delivers two of our dual degrees with us already. Our the only two-year degree students we have on the campus in connective media and the health tech program are part of this dual degree. So when they leave, they get a degree from Cornell and the Technion. And we have just begun to scratch the surface of that partnership. And it is embodied through something we call the Jacobs Technion Cornell Institute here at Cornell Tech. And it's a place for research. It's a place for entrepreneurship. It's a place for faculty collaboration between our two great institutions. And I think you'll see more academic programs coming out there too.
Sounds good. What would you have liked me to ask you? That's for each of you.
So I would say one thing we didn't touch on is our alumni community.
Okay, go for it.
One of the, because we have this, look, you graduate from law school, you have, you know, an alumni group that are a bunch of lawyers. And that's great. Right. And you graduate from an undergraduate major and you have an alumni group, you know, you're going to have your friends from your undergraduate program or whatever, but you're going to have an alumni group that is, you know, focused around your major and maybe focused around your fraternity or sorority or other folks that you manage to connect with. Here, your alumni group is this interdisciplinary group that you went to school with. So when you graduate, your cohort are, you know, business folks, lawyers, entrepreneurs, future investors, innovators, engineers, computer science folks, information science folks. And so you have this depth of network from the day you graduate that can advance your career in what we hope are going to be very productive ways. They're a little bit unpredictable, but we know, for example, that, you know, our law students have gone off to join and be on the, whether it's on the product side or on the strategy side for companies that started out of Cornell Tech from business folk and engineers. So the ability for folks to network across disciplines from day one, I think we've talked about it a lot, but it gets magnified when you start looking at the alumni community, which builds year over year over year.
Dr. Lutsky, do you want to add anything to that? What would you like me to ask you?
Just very briefly, it's not often that the city of New York gives anybody 12 acres and says, build something cool. one of the coolest campuses in the world. And I'm saying that without hyperbole because we're in an island in the middle of the East River with views of Manhattan and Queens. Our students and faculty live here. We've only just started building on 5 of those 12 acres and we have a long way to go. Our long-term plan is to have a campus of over 2,000 students. And I encourage anybody who's listening to this podcast, who's coming to the city of New York, please do go out to Roosevelt Island, take the tram, take the subway, take the ferry, come see what a cool place we've created because Roosevelt Island is an amazing community for our campus and we hope that we become a great part of it. It's just an incredible, incredible environment for our graduate students.
Thank you. Thank you both for adding that. I really appreciate it. I haven't visited the campus, but I understand it is utterly unbelievable.
We like to think so. You're welcome to visit anytime you want.
Next time I'm in New York City, I'll try and do that. Dean Damore and Dr. Lutsky, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more?
Sure. Of course, a lot of information is available on our website at tech.cornell.edu. We are also very, very attentive to our email inbox because we are a very open office and we're often not at phones and desks. We prefer email. Admissions@tech.cornell.edu usually gets an answer within 24 to 48 hours. Those are the best two places to start your journey. More information is on our website, too, about specific questions.
Okay, great. We'll include links in the show notes to the URL that Dr. Lutsky just gave. You can find the link at exhibit.com/289. And we're also going to have links to related articles and show notes. Listener, thank you, too, for joining Dean Damore and Dr. Lutsky and me for our 289th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. Final thanks to today's sponsor, Accepted. You too can access the expertise and experience that have helped thousands gain acceptance to the graduate programs and the subsequent careers of their dreams. Explore our services at www.accepted.com. Thanks again for listening. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.